you, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us at tonight's Comic Book Club. Here are your hosts, Pete LePage, Justin Tyler, and Alex Sauer.
Weekly talk show about comic books. We are very excited to have all of you here tonight. Yeah. Also, since he introduced us, this is a good chance to introduce him. Our man, Booth, Boothman.
Yeah. Booth!
Never
say
new
ones!
Yeah! Yeah. I'll be the first and the last.
So, Resident Super Bowl.
Big night. This is a big night for America.
Yeah, that's right.
Huge stuff going on all over America.
You guys are talking about the Dark Tower signing, right?
Yes. Huge. People in Ohio, people in Texas, all over the place.
Yeah,
all over the place lining up to buy the Dark Tower. Very
exciting. Yeah, it's crazy.
That's the only news in the world today.
Wow.
Are you guys excited? You know, the Dark Tower signing midnight all across the nation for real. Are you guys excited about that?
Slow burner. Slow burner.
That's good. You guys are a slow burner audience. We're very excited to have you here. We're also very excited to have our guests here tonight.
Yeah.
We have two great guests for you. In case you've never been to the show before, we have a guest from the world of comedy and a guest from the world of comic books. Ladies and gentlemen, our guests tonight are Chris Gethard and Peter David!
There's a guy.
They're here, they're gone.
There's some guy.
No, seriously, when you're sitting here and the lights are in your eyes, can't see a thing. But when I go like this, there's people.
A lot of those are mannequins, to be fair.
How are you guys doing? Good?
Fine. Good.
Great. How are you?
I'm all right.
That's how are you
that's
doing?
That's the first time anybody has ever asked me that question.
Oh, my God. Oh, jeez.
Nobody ever wants to know how I'm doing.
I never want to know how
I'm
doing.
No, you're a jerk. Thank you guys so much for coming on the show. Peter, I think we'll start with you. So tonight, thank you. So tonight, the second Dark Tower series is coming out.
It is?
Yes, surprise.
That's the rumor around the campfire.
Yes. So the... I mean, this is kind of a big thing, I guess. Just the last series in this series, as far as I know, they're the first midnight openings for comic book stores.
To the best of my knowledge, basically, Marvel took its cue from successful midnight openings from Harry Potter and that sort of thing, and Stephen King fans are no less rabid than J.K. Rowling fans. Actually, some of them, in fact, may genuinely be rabid. explain a good deal. And so they decided to make this available to retailers to see what kind of turnout they would get. And they honestly had no idea how it would do. And it was successful. I mean, obviously, since we're doing it again. And I went to the one at Midtown Comics that and opened, it was in February of last year. And crazy. They had over 100 people turn out for it. And I cannot emphasize enough, over 100 people, midnight, Times Square, which at that point in February with the chill factor was somewhere around 5 degrees.
It was very cold.
To be perfectly fair, 3% of those people are sitting over here.
Yeah, we are. Okay. Yeah. Nice map.
Thank you. I did that in my head.
Do you have body doubles in different cities tonight signing books?
Yes, actually, all I have to do to create them is I hit something or stamp something, and multiple versions of me all across the country. It's pretty exciting.
That's awesome.
Like what you know.
Yeah.
One of the big things about the series that's coming out tonight, I think, is that it's original material, right, from the Dark Tower universe.
The first series did have scenes and moments and characters who had either not been in or were simply referenced but never actually seen in the original series. But yes, at this point now, we're pretty much flying solo, which was always the plan. Essentially, the first 7 issues was writing Stephen King using training wheels. You know, I mean, because I had the text from Wizard in Glass and Gunslinger to draw upon, which was actually kind of an interesting experience because people who were critical,
guy,
again, third time I'm going to come out and hold your nose. He's not going to see this right through it. No, no, you hold the nose, it helps out. At any rate,
this is also a sneezing club.
We will not talk about sneeze club. people who were, I always thought it was fascinating, people who were critical of the first series, who claimed that I had no ear for Stephen King's dialogue, would invariably cite specific passages that I had lifted verbatim from Wizard in Glass. And they cited those to indicate how I had just a total tin ear for the way that Steve writes books. So I always thought that was entertaining. Yeah, Steve. I mean,
yeah.
He came up to me. I mean, the most unassuming, sweetest guy.
No way.
Way. I mean, yeah. To look at him, you wouldn't know. I mean,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, he has devil.
And it was at the February Comic Con. It was the first time that I'd met him before, but at book signings, you know? It was the first time that I had a chance to be face-to-face with him after, you know, being working Dark Tower. And he walks into the green room, and he's at a... Yeah, of course. He walks into the green room, and he comes up to people and says, "Hi, I'm Steve." Steve! Hi, Steve. the most unassuming guy. And although he had said, you know, in emails and stuff that he was approving my work on it, and yes, I was totally terrified by that aspect, I said to him face to face, I said, "Do you like my work on Dark Tower?" And it was like a benediction. He goes, "You're doing a terrific job." I mean, you know, now, I have to admit, when Stephen King is putting his hand up, your first instinct is going to be, you know.
Yeah, it's going to kill me.
Yeah, it's just, you know, rip it off, use it as basketball, whatever. But I guess whatever internal demons King has, he exercises them in his writing. And thus, in real life, is very, you know, very calm and very unassuming and, you know, very sweet, because it's all, whatever crap may be running around his head, it all goes into the books, and we paid $25. I mean, you know, which is cheaper than therapy as far as he's concerned.
Yeah, I gotta start writing, because it's all in here. Poison coming out of my mouth.
Yeah. More than I needed to know.
So, I mean, here's a kind of general question I have about the Dark Tower series in particular is, it's beautifully rendered. I mean, Jay Lee does an amazing job on the art.
Jay Lee, he also does not get enough credit, Richard Easanoff. Mm-hmm. That's how you pronounce it, Easanoff, which is easy to remember because it's like, Easanoff down the road. That's how I remember it. Yeah.
Does he use that to remember his own name?
Curiously enough, that's what he uses to remember Richard. We don't know what's going on. But at any rate, I mean, Jay and Richard are just doing fantastic, absolutely fantastic job on the series.
So I guess my question then is, how far in advance do you guys work on it? Is the entire thing ready to go at this point? Is the entire series ready to go, or are you...
Oh my God, no.
We're
getting the book out on time. That's a lot more than a lot of folks. it was amazing because when we were first sending around the artwork and displaying the artwork for the first series, and people going, "Oh well, you know, it's Jay Lee, and look how gorgeous it is. That means it's going to be late." And at the point that they were saying that, we already had 4 to 5 issues done in the drawer, ready to go. Jay is working a little bit more under the gun, no pun intended, this time. But nevertheless, there's no diminishment in the quality of what he's doing.
His art changes so much from book to book, I think. Like, it's so specific, so detailed on this book. Love it.
He's basically world building. When you're doing something in the Marvel Universe, it's in the Marvel Universe. There are certain things that are just going to be standard. I mean, when you're doing New York City, it's New York City, that kind of thing. He's actually creating, he and Richard are creating the world of the Dark Tower. I think they're just doing a spectacular job.
Yeah.
Let's move on and talk about another series that you're writing right now, X Factor, which is actually kind of a return to the book for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, in a certain way. You're a big
huge X Factor fan, all the way from the old your old run, new run, all the way through.
Good.
that's it. I'll have to say.
Well, it's funny, it's better, direction than to say, so X Factor, it sucked when you first started writing it. It sucks even harder now. So I'm kind of liking the way this is going.
This was sort of a little bit of a transition, actually.
Nice.
I just wanted to say it was a transition. So it was a transition.
Yeah, it's usually our job.
They are professionals. Kids, yeah. Don't try these transitions at all.
We're going to hurt yourself.
We're going to walk you guys through the show, so don't worry.
So you can start your own show. Maybe live in theater.
And have your own transitions, and then we'll work on to foreshadowing. Yeah. Ooh, yeah, heavy duty stuff.
I'm going to kill Justin later.
I don't think you did that.
It's not foreshadowing. It's a fact.
You guys are still in the train.
Foreshadowing is, Justin, you know, you're not looking well.
Man,
I hope nothing happens to you.
I guess
done by the master.
Yeah, I know. I wrote Peter David will threaten me tonight in my journal today.
And that's
now
amazing.
It's come true. Yeah. Now that's foreshadowing.
Chris, you're a comedian about town.
Right.
that's how we refer to it.
Right. In the old sense.
Yeah, but there was another reason that you're here tonight besides being a very...
I am here to meet you, Mr. Peter David. When I found out you were on the show, I emailed these guys and I said, if there's any way you can introduce me to Peter David, there's something I've wanted to get off my chest to him for literally 14 years.
And it's not that much chest.
Buckle up. Foreshadow that.
Like Justin, I'm a huge X Factor fan, and I would say X Factor actually kind of changed my experience with comic books because, you know, as a kid in that era who loved all the X Men, it was all, you know, just like big boobs and crazy stories, and X Factor came along, was so different, and kind of, I think, really did change how I look at things. And I fell in love with all those characters. So, in a sense, I want to thank you for that. But also, I cannot forgive you at all, because by making me fall in love with those characters, you literally made me do the most humiliating thing of my entire life. And that's why I'm here on the show tonight.
Up until tonight.
Up until revisiting the same humiliation. You had left the book at this point, but in X Factor number 100, the Multiple Man died of the Legacy Virus, like AIDS for mutants, you know?
Yeah.
That's a great parallel they drew.
You had made me love that character so much that, if I may, I would like to read a letter to you that I wrote immediately after reading X Factor number 100.
Is it to me or is it to X Factor?
It's two. It's two exchanges, but in my heart, I know that I'm an X Factor and to a degree you.
Even though I didn't actually write the story.
No.
Great.
Not at all.
this was
I take enough shit for the stuff I did.
And this letter was printed in X Factor number 105.
Number 105. August 1994, which I will also say, this was printed the same week I entered my freshman year of high school. And my brother was a senior, so he told everyone in high school about this, and they all read it. So this is what I wrote, and I do blame you for your good writing, for making me feel this strongly. Dear Exchanges, in the past 7 months, there have been a whole lot of great X comics. Some of them have made me think, and yes, I'll be the first to admit it, some of them made me cry. Most of these have been affiliated with the Legacy Virus. Two such issues that made me emotional were Ilyana's death in Uncanny X-Men and Infectious death in X-Men. I will say, at this point, I don't even remember who Infectious was. I don't know who that was. However, none have made me so sad as X-Factor number 100. I have loved X-Factor.
Which I have not read to this
day. And I wish I had, to spare myself the social antagonism this led to. I have loved X-Factor for the 8 years that I have collected comics. I really loved it when the new team came on. Your work, Mr. David. Especially because it included my favorite character, Jamie Madrox, the Multiple Man.
Yeah, we got all the people nobody else wanted.
I first saw Jamie in reprints of the Proteus storyline from Uncanny X-Men. I thought his power was unique, and his old green and yellow costume was one of my favorites. Needless to say, when my eyes graced the cover to number 100 as I walked past the comic book shelves, I grabbed
it. Can you show me what eyes gracing the cover was?
I knew that Jamie had the virus, and then you can see I put this in all capital letters. But he's dead? No! As soon as I got home...
Whenever anyone goes, no, I always picture gargoyles. Go, I go, no! Yeah,
very much my 14-year-old reaction, sir. As soon as I got home, I read this issue. I saw the effect on his dupes, giving them a multiple personality disorder. But I thought that was the extent of the effects of the virus on him. I thought that somehow his powers would help him come through this, but now my favorite character is dead. You may think I'm going to start campaigning to bring back Jamie, but I feel he should stay dead. Jamie showed me a lot in his short stint in the comic book limelight. This is a very sad part because it reveals a lot about the sadness of my childhood. Even though he had so much pain growing up in solitude, he was always joking and smiling. Just like me. Just like me.
You read your entrance
line? No, I didn't.
Oh.
Read between the lines. Here's a part you'll appreciate, I'm sure. I remember his mayo jar trick and all of those one-liners that kept me sane. Again, very bad childhood. Jamie was always a friend to me, and I'll miss him. Goodbye, Jamie. This letter is dedicated to the memory of Jamie Madjax. And then I put, I've never once in my life before or since referred to myself by my full name. I put Christopher Paul Gethard, 13 Allen Street, West Orange, New Jersey. So there was no denying it. I put both my full name and my address. As I mentioned, my brother was a senior. Thanks to you making me love the multiple man, I was for my entire freshman year.
In a very unhealthy way.
Yes. I was known my whole freshman year as the kid who cried when the multiple man died.
That's poetic.
And now, having been stupid enough to bring it up, you can actually be known as the adult.
Yes.
Multiple man dying was one of the reasons that I left X Factor.
Fuck them, right?
In the first you have to understand, they hated multiple man. The artists hated multiple man.
His old costume was one of my favorites.
Their attitude was, he's a boring looking guy, and his power is to turn into a lot of boring looking guys. So let's kill him with the legacy virus. And I was sitting there, someone going, boo. And I'm sitting there going, look, first off, I already killed him in my very first issue. You know, and of course it was a dude. I said, who do you think you're fooling? Of course, now we know. quoting myself, I'm going, who's going to be stupid enough to think, well, you brought it up, man. You know, I said, who's going to be stupid enough to think they were killing off multiple men, considering his whole shtick is that you can never kill multiple men, because there's always another fucking multiple man wandering around somewhere.
Can I just say, I never thought revealing my teenage torment you caused would lead to you personally doing it.
So, my defense, I was actually looking off in this direction. Yeah. I thought it was monumentally stupid that
they
were doing
this. The characters for that run, did they say free reign, pick all the schlubs you want?
No. They basically said, hey, want to write X Factor? And I went, hell yeah! I mean, Cyclops. And with him, well. They said, no, there's a little problem. You're not going to get any of those guys. And I said, what do you mean I'm not getting any of those guys? And they said, okay, you're going to be getting multiple man, and you're going to be getting Guido. I'm going, Guido? What? And they said, yeah. And they're like, oh, my God. The thing that made me take the book, aside from the fact that it was writing an X book, so it's decent exposure, was that Rain was going to be in it, because I always had a real love of Rain, because it goes all the way back to the fact that I named her Wolfsbane. She was the first character I ever named. I was in Louise Simon's. I think it was Louise Simonson, her office. I think she was the editor at the time. And Chris was there, and they were having. He was having trouble coming up with a name for Rain Sinclair for her heroic name. And he was describing, you know, what he wanted to do with her to Weezy. And I was in the office because I was coming there to get solicitation information, because at the time I was Marvel's assistant direct sales manager, and that was one of my jobs, to get solicitation information. And I said to Chris, look, if turning into a wolf is the bane of her existence, why don't you call it Wolfsbane? Wow. And Chris went, ooh, I like that. So, you know, like I said, I always have that kind of feel for the character. But yeah, I really liked Jamie. And, you know, my attitude was, if you're going to kill off somebody with X Factor, why killing off the one person who is more or less, you know, most people, aside from the occasional 14-year-old boy, is going to think that there's no way that he's dead. I mean, death is fluid enough a concept in the Marvel Universe, much less killing off someone whose whole shtick is that he's always coming back because he's out there somewhere. There's always another Jamie going, ha ha, psych, I'm actually over here. So yeah, I totally agree with you.
Would you have killed Guido?
What?
The way you just said, oh, Guido, was that the one you were least psyched to deal with?
No, I was just kind of going, Guido? I mean, you know, because, you know, like, the notion, in the old days, right, when you were starting up a team, you would start up, you know, particularly when you're dealing with pre-existing characters, I'm not talking like the FF, when you're doing a pre-existing characters, the concept was simple. You took all the strongest characters and you put them into a book so that all the readers would come and buy that book. So you have the team books and you have Superman and Batman and Wonder Woman. You know, it's a Justice League and everyone's going to come to flock to buy it because chances are you're going to hit the, the Superman fans will buy it, the Batman fans will buy it, the Wonder Woman fans will buy it.
The Guido fans will buy it.
Yeah, that's the thing! You know, so when they restarted X-Factor, it's like, we're going to take the strongest X-Men characters, the ones that people have always had a love for, and, you know, that's what we're going to bring back. And I'm going, okay, we're going to be doing X-Factor. And this was so far away from the concept of the strongest characters you can get that you can't even begin to describe it. You know, it's you know, we're getting the characters. You know how the old thing, because you demanded it? No one was demanding for a team book. It doesn't mean I didn't like the character, and I mean I grew to love each and every one of the characters, but no one was begging to see Guido in an ongoing book. You know?
Well, it's funny because that's the more modern way of putting together team books. It's like, what C, B list characters can we pull together into a team?
And have Peter David write.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, I think it's time to move on to our first section, which
we
like to call.
We want to have more in this book. Well, Christ, don't like David anyway. That's too high power character.
Dude, it's dance stack.
All right, first thing we're going to talk about, we're going to keep talking to you, Peter. She-Hulk, latest issue, blah, number 26.
No,
She-Hulk 26. So this is a title that you're returning
We got
to,
one up here,
basically.
Too, so it's he's waving his copy.
There you go. We're doing a mirror game with the audience.
That's fun.
So, what brought you back to this title? I mean, was it just...
I wasn't really back on this title. I never wrote this title before. I take that back. I wrote one issue of
right.
She-Hulk. There was a fill-in issue back, you know, during the Byrne run, or the aborted Byrne run before Byrne ran out and then ran back in. But this was actually... and I've written the character a couple of times during my run on Hulk, but this is the first time that I've actually written the ongoing title.
Okay. Dan Slott's on the show a couple times, and his run was fine, but when you took over, I was like, finally, She-Hulk's good, and he is mad at me, personally. But
I loved a lot of what Dan did. I thought he did a fantastic job.
He got very...
I mean, he's really...
complex.
He's really a tough act to follow. I mean, because he had such a unique vision for the book, and if I tried to emulate what Dan's doing, it's going to suck.
Yeah.
So I knew that I was going to have to take it off in a different direction, and I knew that was going to piss people off. And the thing is that I was actually talking to Dan about this, and he really brought up an incredibly valid point. And like I said, I'm attributing this to Dan, and I think he's absolutely right. That the way he described it, Thor fans know what they want. They want Thor to beat the shit out of people with his hammer. And then they argue, well, he should beat the shit out of bigger guys, or he should have beaten them up faster, or whatever. But they're of one mind. She-Hulk fans are all over the Sonic place.
Yeah.
You've got some She-Hulk fans want humor. Some She-Hulk fans don't want humor. Some She-Hulk fans want us to start breaking the fourth wall again. Others will stop buying the book if we break the fourth wall again. Some people want her to be the Savage She-Hulk again. Some will stop buying the book if we ever even bring up the Savage She-Hulk. there's no uniformity of view of what the fans want the character to be. And that indeed may be why, the character's had a troubled sales history.
Yeah.
Because we keep pleasing segments of the readership. But then we keep losing segments of the readership.
Similar to a character like Supergirl, which you also wrote.
Yeah.
Because I feel like that's the same thing, where there are so many different interpretations in it. People are pissed. Like, people love your run, and like, other people hate it. I mean, that was
sure.
a much kind of maligned run, but I feel like this runs a lot like that, maybe because the characters are so similar in that way.
Like the Supergirl one?
Yeah.
Well, I suppose. A character who's looking, trying to find answers and that kind of thing.
And going out and doing something, like going in a different direction.
And it kind of makes me nuts that, I mean, I think she's being, don't get me wrong, I think she's being handled well in other books. And she's kind of all over the place. But it kind of makes me crazy that she's hobnobbing with Tony Stark and Reed Richards and all the people who fucked her over, sometimes literally, and her cousin, that kind of thing, as if everything is okay. Women don't forgive that.
Tell me more about this concept.
They don't. I mean, it's like you could be having an argument with your significant other, and she is going to suddenly bring up shit that you did 4 years ago that she has still not gotten over. And you're going, where did this come from? They really, they may forgive, but they never forget.
So,
and the concept that She-Hulk is that quickly fighting side by side with Reed and with Tony Stark, and it's like, It's making me a little crazy. And I suppose the other aspect is that in She-Hulk, I have her going through a great deal of soul-searching. And, because this is someone who was screwed over by the system, right? The system that she trusted, the system that she has spent her whole life believing in, both the system of justice and, the great superhero society.
So much of the Hulk arc was about her literally
right.
being screwed over.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, just...
And so it makes me nuts that some fans have said, well, it doesn't matter what happens in this, because over in other books, she's already fighting side by side with Iron Man. And it's like, yeah, but I'm getting it right.
Plus, you got a Skrull in here.
Yeah,
so,
a Skrull.
And that's the next big event.
Yeah.
So... You're at the Nexus.
You can't. No, that's a different book. But yeah, actually, I when I introduced the character of a Skrull into the book, I really kind of backed into it because I originally wasn't going to have it be a Skrull. I knew I wanted to have a shape-shifting character who was going to be her sidekick. And I went through a couple of other concepts before finally deciding, look, why don't I just have it be a female Skrull bounty hunter? Something that she could, girl talk, bouncing, ideas and thoughts off of each other. Plus, I like the idea of having an alien character because you really can't do better to have an outside perspective of humanity than having it be through the eyes of an alien. So, that's where, Jacinda kind of came from. It wasn't done with the notion of, gee, I'm going to do this so I can tie in with Secret Invasion. Which, by the way, is going to kick ass. I've been reading the scripts, and obviously I'm not going to give any details out.
You can turn this off.
But
I'll break it if you want.
If you want to just give us all of them.
All I can tell you is that when when fans get to the last pages of issue one, the internet is going to explode.
Wow.
I mean,
wow.
First the fans' heads will go, and then the internet is going to erupt again. This will be like nothing. All right. This will be like nothing you've ever seen.
Wow.
Trust me.
Wow.
That's fucking foreshadowing. So set up and let's get out of
here. All right, let's move on. Talk about the ninth issue of All-Star Batman and Robin the Boy Wonder by Frank Miller.
Creepiest issue ever.
This book is crazy. It's a train wreck.
It is crazy.
Okay, just out of curiosity, who's reading this and liking this book out there?
Wow.
Interesting.
There's a fair amount of people.
Because I feel like there's been a lot of back and forth in terms of this book. I know this isn't even necessarily getting into my own opinions about it, where people have been like, this is total crap, and then other people are like, no, it's a superhero parody. It's hilarious.
Well, that's what I feel like. Eventually, he's gonna twist it and be like, "This is what I've been doing the whole time." Because up until now, you're like, "Is this supposed to actually be Batman or like a dick?"
Because for those of you who haven't been reading it, he basically is just like, "Ha ha! I hate superheroes." He traps Hal Jordan, Green Lantern, in a room that he paints entirely yellow.
He paints his face yellow. Everything's yellow.
He drinks lemonade in the room. Just to fuck with Hal Jordan.
Because that's his weakness back then, I guess.
It was yellow.
See, I always thought, I had trouble with that notion because I always had a notion of the problem that Green Lantern would be taken out by Banana Man.
That being said, I think this is kind of crappy. I would fall into the side of crappy.
It creeps me out, man.
Also, he beats up Robin all the time. It's
and then at the end where he's hugging Robin, I'm like, stop touching boys.
And even the yellow room.
To say nothing of the fact that the thing that Jim kind of overlooked is that the fact that he painted everything yellow would not stop Green Lantern. It's very simple. Okay, I'm Green Lantern, you're Batman.
Cool.
Okay. start talking to me.
Hi, how are
you? Ring beam right down your mouth.
Dang.
Okay, now I've got my beam around your lower intestines, hot shot. What are you going to do now?
Oh, man.
So that's...
Now we threatened Alex. It's me and Alex. Pete. Watch out.
And also the eyepiece is still white.
Right.
I'm glad that you are a writer who works professionally in this world has the same thought process that I have reading. I'm like, oh, he could just totally shoot this ring laser down his throat and grab his intestines.
Well, I think I sound a little less retarded.
Wow!
It's an honor to have you call me retarded.
No. I said I sound less retarded.
Hey, don't take it away from me. It was a beautiful moment.
I noticed that whenever my daughters recount something that I've said, I always sound like I have the IQ of a shrimp cocktail. And the dad goes, I don't know why you can't stay out till 2 in the morning.
Women, right?
Let's move on and talk about Kick-Ass number 1 by Mark Millar and John Romita Jr. What'd you guys think about this issue?
It should be called Ass Kicked, number 1.
Ew.
If you haven't heard about this, it's kind of a boy in the real world who... wants to be a superhero.
Right.
And I feel like they're really pushing, like, no, this is the real world. Because this concept has been kind of done a lot lately. And like, no, it's real. But this one, he makes a reference to, like, reading Astonishing X-Men. So
right.
It's like, no, this one's, like, happening now. As if it's, like, a documentary. And, I don't know, it's a weird first issue in that the guy dresses up like Arrow and then gets his ass kicked.
Yeah, he gets punched, stabbed, thrown in front of a car, and basically is lying dead at the end of the first issue.
Yeah.
That being said, here's my thing about it. First of all, I think it's a well-done issue. It's well-written. It's incredibly well-drawn.
Yeah. John Romita Jr.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
Ridiculous. But it plays out almost exactly like a regular superhero origin,
yeah.
Where you have the superhero finding out about his powers, trying out his powers,
ending up getting beaten up a little bit and end up...
What is this about? A little bit? He gets hit by a freaking car.
Well, okay, I'm saying, in general, in a comic book, it follows... It's following essentially the same path.
I didn't know the human body had
path.
That much blood in it. Holy cow.
He has extra blood. That's his power.
I like that. Yeah.
You want more? I got more!
Keep stabbing.
Regular Red Cross.
So I liked it, but I feel kind of reserved about it.
Yeah, I feel the same way. Did you guys...
I read it. I was surprised... In the letter in the back where he's saying, this is my favorite fucking thing I've ever worked on. Yeah. I kind of read that and I was like, you must not think well of your previous body of work. It's pretty good, but that, like, right here, right? I'll be the guy who reads all the letters tonight. Like, this is the most fun we've ever had working on one of these shiny comic book things. I know it's uncool to say how much I love my own book, but I kind of read it and I was like,
meh. Maybe you didn't have any letters that said that somebody else liked it.
Oh, that was touching a little. That was a little touching. Nice. I agree.
Oh, it says you won, though. I mean, well, then it's okay. It's not a letters page. It's an introductory page. Well, that makes sense.
Would you say pick it up?
Yeah, pick it up.
Okay.
Because it could... Supposedly, it's going to get better. I don't know. There's been so much hype about this.
Yeah. Well, that's Mark Millar hyping it.
Yeah, and like Mark, in the back of the book.
There's so much hype from Mark Millar, who's the writer of the book.
But
it's like, it's awesome. Oh, everybody loves it.
I love it.
It's true.
I also feel like it was...
I gotta say, I love the last page. I mean, aside from the fact he's lying there in a bloody heap, the last couple of captions are just hysterical because that's exactly what a kid in that situation would actually say. And I'm not going to tell you because you should really pick up the bloody thing yourself. No pun intended. That's Mark for you. Yeah.
It's good. I would say pick it up. Moving on to another series, you should definitely pick up Blue Beetle number 24. This series is awesome. So good. It's funny. It's touching. It's well done. This is pretty much tying up the entire arc that John Rogers has been writing with the title, and it plays out like the big budget alien Blue Beetle movie.
And sad to say,
which we've all been waiting for.
Sad to say, the writer, John Rogers, is leaving the book after the next issue. And he said in an interview that went up today on Newsarama that he may come back to it after a while, but still, sad. This has been like, just, it's like Spider-Man, like the Spider-Man origin story again. Like, in a way where you're like, oh, this is so real. It's like, this is a character that could become as popular as Spider-Man.
Here's, this is, maybe you guys can remind me, do you remember what John Rogers is moving on to?
He's doing. They didn't announce it.
Yeah, it's
something big for DC.
Well, this is a question I'm going to turn over to you, Peter. So he writes this Blue Beetle series, first 24 issues. It's a legacy character, but it's definitely a reboot of the character, a new character. It feels fresh. It feels different. And then it seems to me, just from the sidelines, kind of that he's sort of lured away. He did a great job, so they're like, great, we're going to give you this other title, like a Superman or a Batman or something like that. Okay. I mean, what is for writers, that's something that you find, in general, happens a lot. I mean, what needs to
no, nobody
somebody?
Ever tries to lure me away from Andy.
I guess I mean in terms of something that is like a lower tier book, how strong is the temptation to leave for something else versus being like, no, you know what, I want to develop this, I want to stay on this for a while.
You're asking me to speak broadly on behalf of all writers, and
please.
You really can't.
Yeah.
I mean, for different people, it's going to be different things. I mean, there will be some people who will feel that you're not going to, the only way I'm going to let this character go is when you pry it out of my cold, dead fingers. There are others who will see a character as basically a stepping stone, a means to an end. Mm-hmm. It really falls into the different strokes for different folks, Kevin.
What about, like, your run on Aquaman, which is my favorite work of yours, Time and Tide, and then on the series.
Thanks.
It broke my heart a little bit when you left, because
mind you,
no one's written it. It's gone from writer to writer, and it's so...
I was going crazy on the book, because, I mean, the reason that I left, because I had stuff that I wanted to do, but I kept getting these incredibly contradictory editorial directives. You know, we want to see Aquaman totally, we want to see Aquaman operating completely on his own, but we want to also show him being a leader. we want to see politics and intrigue, but don't do stories set in Atlantis.
Wow.
You know, so I'm not sure what they wanted short of having Aquaman walk by himself into Congress.
Oh, wait a second.
And take charge of the United States. I mean, you know. But, you know, and I finally couldn't take it anymore, and I said, you know what, you know, forget. And I had a storyline that I wanted to do. I mean, I wanted to kill off Aquaman and have him be gone for, and I want to have...
I would have cried.
And I wanted to have, you know, Aqualad, Tempest, Garth take over and be the new Aquaman and do this whole storyline. Eventually Aquaman would come back, and, you know, but this is my, I envision as being like a year or two. And they said, no, we don't want to do that. We have no interest in doing that. And with that and the combination of all the other stuff, I finally said, you know what, fine, screw it. And I quit, and I left the book. And a couple of years later, you know, a few years later, they did pretty much exactly what I had proposed.
Except instead of doing something that made sense, they made it come back as an octopus face with a totally new character coming up.
But that was also Aquaman.
Yeah, it was...
Aquaman was split into an octopus-based creature and another guy who looked like Aquaman.
Yeah, it was insane.
Yeah, it was much better than what I had.
Yeah.
Although it was significant in that Eric Larson followed me on Aquaman and lasted less than a year, and when he quit, he basically said, and these are the only times that I think these words have ever come out of Eric, Peter David was right. Because I had been quite upfront with the fact that I was going nuts in terms of the editorial contradictions, and Eric was getting it just as bad, if not worse, than I did, and he couldn't take it, and he quit too. You know, so it was kind of comforting to know it wasn't just me, I guess.
How long before someone can finally be like, "Hey, wait a sec, maybe we should get rid of this editor. He's really, you know, cramping the style."
After the book was canceled.
Yeah. Years later. Yeah.
Let's actually move on and talk to something that is semi-related, I think, which is Fallen Angel, which you're currently doing with IDW.
Yep.
And I think this is a character, correct me if I'm wrong, that you've done the way you wanted to do it.
Yes,
right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's terrific having that kind of control over a character. I don't have to worry about what's being done with Fallen Angel in three other Fallen Angel books or three other books coming out from IDW. It's, you know, what I say goes. If I decide I'm going to kill off characters, I don't have to worry that someone else is going to decide to bring them back.
Read our fan fiction and you will see that.
what will we see?
Talk to David, Peter David. Talk to
David. and the guys at IDW have just been so supportive. And the thing is, they're published, you know, they picked up Fallen Angel for the best possible reason that a publisher can want to, which is they wanted to see what happens next. I mean, the moment that DC announced that the book was canceled, Chris Ryle was in touch with me saying, "We want to see what happens next. We want to see what happens with the Fallen Angel. You know, can we publish this book?"
And how often does that happen in the comic book industry? Like, never.
Not that often.
Yeah.
Not that often. And J.K. Woodward has just been doing, I think, a fantastic job on the book. I mean, really giving it the look and style that I've been looking for. And I've just been doing such incredible experimentation with storytelling. I mean, I had issue 22 was the preface to this massive war that's raging through Bete Noire, and it was seen entirely from the point of view of one young boy who sleptwalked his way into Bete Noire. And so he keeps seeing pieces of everything that was going on with no clear idea of what the hell was the true picture. Then, starting with issue 23, I basically went back before the events that the kid was witnessing, saw the lead up to it, and then in issue 24, we actually now are cutting in and out of the stuff that the kid saw. So we're now seeing the flip side of what the kid was witnessing, which, granted, I may admit may be a little bit confusing for people who don't remember everything that happened in 22 2 months ago. On the other hand, when you read it all in one shot in a graphic novel on the trade, it will make absolute perfect sense. I don't typically write for the trade, as they say, but this is one instance where it will, I think, hang together even more once you read it all in one sitting and then go, ah, okay, got it.
Cool.
Yeah. And how long, I mean, is this open-ended for you? Is this as long as you can come up with Fallen Angels?
Yeah, pretty much, pretty much. I mean, as long as IDW wants to keep publishing, absolutely.
They're actually going to cancel it.
They wanted us to tell you. Since you're so close.
No!
All right, let's move on. Talk about the, 208th / first issue of X-Men Legacy, which basically Professor X has been shot in the head, you guys.
But that's got to hurt.
Yeah, but he's still thinking about stuff.
Kudos.
What did you guys think about this issue?
Well, it's a crazy, the premise of the title change and all this is that at the end of the Messiah Complex, Professor X is shot by Bishop, who was trying to shoot Cable, but Cable teleported through time, so the bullet went into Professor X, then another character stopped time, grabbed the body disappeared, the rest of the X-Men were like, where did...
There was something here that we were probably...
He was here and he was shot.
Oh, wait, we should go fight
we
somebody.
We should go
fight.
And go back and set up the school. And so now it's like, and now all these other mutants have him, and he's like dreaming his life, and then it gets cut off. It's a crazy concept, but it actually, I'm excited for the series.
Yep.
Good night.
It's basically crazy town, and then it's also an excuse to be like, hey, remember when the X-Men were drawn like this? Those were the good old days.
Again,
just a couple of X-Men.
It's John Romita Jr. Basically, whenever they have a flashback to the beginning days of the X-Men, John Romita Jr. draws it, as opposed to, I'm completely blanking on the other artist's name.
Eaton.
Thank you.
Always reading you.
It's very good. The only thing I don't understand is why this is not a limited series. Necessarily.
Yeah.
It doesn't necessarily seem something like, wow, I'm going to read 200 issues of Professor Xavier lying down and remembering stuff. That's going to be awesome. Yeah. I mean,
it may end up, I would hope, becoming more of a team book again, but I like Professor X, and it's a character they always gloss over. They're like, wheelchair, now he's walking, now something else is happening, now he's a jerk. And in this, it's like, okay, let's figure out why he's had all these crazy things go on in his life.
Actually, what's going to happen is every 10 issues, they're going to shoot Professor X someplace else.
Yeah. Wow.
I'm really very excited about it.
Bold story, John. Did you, having read this, was it confusing or?
Well, I would say, like I said, I was a big X-Men fan and I gave it up. And again, even though you have mocked my previous writing endeavors, When you returned to X-Factor, a friend of mine actually contacted me, and I got back into comics based on that. And when the X-Factor issue came up in Messiah Complex, I started reading all the other X-Men books. And it made me feel, and this one makes me feel, just like I did when I walked away from the X-Men, which was right around the time Chris Claremont returned, which is like, I'm always going to be excited, and it's never going to make sense.
Yeah. Wow. That's just a good tagline.
I want to have an advertising campaign for X Factor going, X Factor, we make sense.
Right? Yeah.
But they, you know, because, you know, they threw away that idea along with my other one of X-Men Legacy. What the fuck?
When I went to the comic book store to buy an issue of X Factor, I mean, I was so shut off, I didn't know anything about Messiah Complex. When the X Factor issue came up, they were like, X Factor sold out. And I was like, fucking A. That feels to me like a 15 year fight that I just helped win.
It feels to me like the store didn't order enough.
It's all about the bottom line.
Writer, and I just, you know, I love the stuff that he's doing.
Now, I know back in the day it was an issue being part of all the crossovers, the editorial decisions on that. And now you're part of Messiah Complex. How do you feel about that?
A lot better about it, because with the original, you know, back in those days, it really seemed like every 3 to 4 months, oops, time for another crossover. And I had to, whatever I was working on, I had to throw it aside and make room for the crossover. With Messiah Complex, I had 6 months' notice before, you know, anything. So that's a lot of time to get all my ducks in a row to thread setup for Messiah Complex in the book, to make sure that the storyline that I'm working on at that point ends cleanly so we can go into Messiah Complex. And I loved the big summit we had, the get-together, which is the first time that I've been to an X summit in years and years and years and years. I mean, it was nuts.
So do they come to you and they're like, we want Multiple Man to be one of the guys at the center of this whole thing? Did they say that?
Or did you laugh?
Or did you?
No, because when I realized, like, because there was a part of me, I know I'm a fucking geek, but I was like, Multiple Man's right in the middle of it all, man. Yeah.
they actually, there was a certain degree of groundwork that had been done before the X meeting. Because that you got to. You can't take a half a dozen writers, put them in a room, and say, okay, guys, we got nothing, what do you want to do? Because you're going to be there for a month. So the editors had the editors had worked with one or two key writers to come up with some basic beats. And they had decided that Multiple Man and Layla were going to be, you know, smack in the middle of everything.
That's awesome to me that it's like there's a boring guy and we want to kill him to, like, now you write him, so, you know, I'm a big fan, but it's like, now you did such a good job, let's put him in the fucking thick of it.
I was very pleased with
him. Me too, man. Me too.
Yeah, all right.
Nice. All right, let's move on and talk about Razzle Number 1 by Jeff Smith, author of Bone. What'd you guys think about this?
It's a crazy first issue. I'm definitely on board. I love Jeff Smith. I love Bone, and this is so different. It's like the opposite of Bone.
Yeah, it's like Jumper.
Yeah.
You know, the movie with Dan Christensen?
Yeah,
it is.
First off, Jeff Smith, I'm there.
Yeah.
Unquestionably. And, yeah, I love about the fact this is nothing like Bone.
Yeah.
Not because I didn't like Bone. I love that series. Yeah. But it's, you know, it's nice that Jeff isn't, you know, it would be easy for Jeff to go, okay, now I'm going to do another fantasy piece about another, like, you know, fun, fuzzy little creature that we make toys of. And instead he went in the completely opposite direction.
Yeah.
And yeah, I just thought this was brilliant.
It's absolutely great. It's a great issue. My quibble with it, which is a very, very silly quibble, is there's not enough of it, and the next issue doesn't come out until May.
May?
Yeah.
No!
That's what I said. That being said, I would definitely say pick up.
Yeah, definitely pick it up.
If it's black and white, which is nice, it's, you know, you don't get a chance to.
He hates colors.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's a nice little break in the action. It's fun to do.
Love shapes, though.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on and talk about Crime Bible number 5, which is the last issue of this limited series. This is another awesome, awesome series. That being said, I have no idea how it ended. I don't want to ruin anything.
Well, it ends with like a one panel thing. There's no to be continued. There's no like
the end. Even.
There's no the end. They're like, see what happens in Trinity or whatever. It's like, this is how we're ending it. It's almost as if someone ripped out the last page.
Here's the other problem with it, is right after the last page, there's this one panel that doesn't have the end or to be continued or anything. There's a preview for another book, so it goes right into these other pages. So I kept reading that, and I was like, wait, no.
Yeah, Superman, what are you doing here?
Oh, I like
Superman.
You know,
wouldn't it be cool if they published a comic book and in the binding had a little strip down the side that actually made it look like the last page had been ripped out?
So they could
screw with the minds of every freaking comic book reader. As they got them going like, wait a minute!
Wait, why?
My book is damaged! Actually, no, then the retailers won't be thrilled. Never mind, terrible.
There'll be a riot at the comic book store.
Do you hate us?
Yeah.
All right, that's it for the stats! All right, let's move on to our next section. It's my favorite section because it's the section you guys make up. It's your audience questions. And for that, we're going to bring out Booth Bass.
Booth Bass!
Hey!
Hey.
Welcome.
All
right, so here are your audience questions. This was written for you, but I think you could all answer it. What is your favorite Hulk story?
Mm.
That I've written?
That you've written or anybody else?
Future Imperfect, beyond question. I love the way this, I mean, whenever I look at any story of mine, it's kind of like, more often than not, it's like 60% of what I wanted to be, 70%, and I don't mean because of the artist, I mean because, you know, of my own limitations, and any one of, you know, a half a dozen reasons. Future Imperfect is perfect. It's exactly what I wanted it to be, and a large measure of that is George Perez, who was just absolutely, you know, fantastic. You know, when you've got George covering your back, you can basically say, double page splash, Rick Jones's trophy room. The following things are in it: the Silver Surfer's board, Thor's hammer, Captain America's shield, and Wolverine's skeleton. Anything else you want to put in is fine. And you get this two-page splash, you're going, holy crap! Yeah. And it's just, you know, it's fantastic. I mean, it's, George is a freaking genius. And I would say just, you know, in terms of my, the work experience, the final product, definitely Future Perfect.
Anything with the Pantheon in it, love them. I wonder what they're doing now. Maybe they're watching TV. Also, your last issue really sticks out in my mind. That rainbow over the funeral was really, and it was a beautifully drawn issue.
Yeah,
I thought as well.
Yeah, Kubert was brilliant.
Great,
did a fantastic job with it.
Let's get the next question.
Yeah. Okay. What super villain do you think would make a better superhero, and why?
Not to undercut this question, but I hate when that happens.
You guys,
I really think, yeah, and I hate whoever asked that question.
They left their name. No.
I also hate Christmas, and that's what your name is.
What just happened, Alex?
I went to a very dark place.
You did.
There we go. Oh, it was just a little darker, right? So, that's where I was.
You hate
place.
Because it's like...
It's just if you're going to take a villain, make it a villain. Don't... You know, there's something to be said for the redemption storyline.
Well,
the
White
like.
Queen. White Queen.
There have... Okay, there are exceptions that prove the rule. There are things that... Good stories that can be done. Okay? But generally speaking...
I got it.
Generally speaking, I would say if you're going to have somebody evil, certainly make them realistic. Make them conflicted, but... I just don't like that every villain has to become a hero, and then you know they're going to betray them, and then they're going to come back to the side of good, and they're going to ping pong back and forth.
Fin Fang Foom.
Wow.
You can't go wrong with a gigantic superhero dragon wearing purple shorts. Just
all right.
Best answer.
Moving on.
Next question.
Don't answer. Okay. So, Peter, what X-Men character, excluding Wolverine, would you love to use an X-Factor, if you could use anyone?
Nightcrawler.
Interesting.
Yeah. I really like Kurt. I would love to use Nightcrawler.
I feel like he hasn't gotten a really good shake lately. They turned him into a priest, and then everyone's like, he's the religious one, we don't really...
but since we've lost Rain, I could really use a religious character.
Would you have like a specific take on him that hasn't been done, like the Quicksilver thing you did in the past? I thought that was so cool.
I might. I mean, I generally don't think too much about what I would do with a character until I actually get them, which may sound ridiculous, and I guess actually is. But I guess I work too much to expend a lot of brain power thinking about characters I can't really do anything with. I like Kurt in terms of what's been done with him. I like his visual. I like that he's one of the few characters who has a very distinctive sound effect.
Bam.
I mean, yeah, there's only three that I can think of who have a distinctive sound effect.
And a smell, actually.
Well, yeah. There's Bamf. Snicket is, of course, Wolverine. And Thwip is Spider-Man firing his weapon.
You also, you're always like,
yeah. Is Spider-Man firing his weapon, you know. And I like the character. And you know, what I would do with him, I'm not entirely sure. I don't really think about these things until I actually have the character to work with.
Pirate ship.
What?
Just an idea, pirate ship.
Pirate ship?
Yeah,
he's
a sword.
Pirate ship.
Is that sword all the time?
Same
yeah, that's true. Be fine. Give him his own pirate ship. Yeah.
Pirate security.
Take the whole series, put it on pirate ship.
Yeah. Done.
Like, you know, when X-Pac has to go someplace, should we jump in the car or should we just take Kurt's pirate ship?
It's already in.
Yeah, I guess they'll get more noir than a pirate.
That's interesting, too, because he could be like, I could just teleport, but I'd rather take this.
That's character development.
I would prefer this antiquated vessel of the sea.
And that's it for your audience question. All right, for our next session, we're going to turn over to Pete and Paige for a little audience trivia.
All right. Yeah. Do the Peter David. All right, this is the part where we give back to you, the lovely audience. We give you a chance to win $25 free to Midtown Comics. Who would like that opportunity? Yes, sir. Quick Braw McGraw over here. Cool Hand Luke. I don't know. I came up with two different things in my head and stumbled over both of them. How are you? What's your name?
I'm John.
John, audience, audience, John. All right, so today's trivia is going to be about Dark Tower for no particular reason. All right. Question. Oh, how it's going to work is you get three questions. Okay.
Every answer.
Yeah, yep. Make sure you listen to all answers before you give your final answer. Okay?
Got it.
And then if you get all three right, that gift certificate will be yours. Okay, here we go. Is the Dark Tower an actual place or A, a metaphor, B, both, or C, Frodo's Buffet Tower? Again, is it A, a metaphor, B, both? We all know it's not C.
I'll go with A.
Or would you say B? There we go. Well, technically, it is a metaphor, and yes, so yes, okay. I was trying to give you a hint by saying both really loud, but all right.
You're confusing because A is the first answer, and then B both.
Oh, see, oh wow. Okay, that's my fault. I'm gonna take the hit on that one.
Sorry.
So we'll give that to you, one for one. All right, here we go. Question two. The series is inspired by A, poem, B, a movie, or C, the fact that Stephen King is a real-life scary person. So it's either A, poem, it would be nice if it was true. B, a movie, movies. We both know now that Stephen King isn't actually scary, so...
I'll go with A.
A is correct! One for one. Here we go. Or two for two, I should say. Last one. Here we go. The main character, Roland, is the last living member of a knightly order known as A, swordsmen, B, gunslingers, or C, NWA. Knights with Attitude.
Wow.
Hey, the K is silent. Everybody knows that. B is correct! $25 is yours, sir. Congratulations. Nice work out there.
Next week, we're just going to hand $25. Well, tomorrow is New Comic Book Day. We recommend you go out to Midtown Comics because they've been nice enough to sponsor the show. Also, you should go out tonight, right after the show at midnight, of course, is the Dark Tower signing.
This show's going to midnight, by the way.
we're just gonna keep going through. We have like a stack this big, guys. What are you guys looking forward to that's coming out tomorrow? I mean, you have Dark Tower.
Dark Tower, yeah. Honest to God, you gave me the list to look at. I can't read it. The printing's too small.
Aww. Gotcha.
So I'm not sure what's coming
out. What do you
have
coming up in general that people should look out for?
That I have coming out, Dark Tower, Fallen Angel, X-Factor, She-Hulk. And if you'd like to read books without pictures.
Ooh. What's that?
I have a book called Tigerheart coming out in June, which may be one of the best things I've ever written, and it's coming out from Del Rey, and it's basically a Peter Pan pastiche, and it's like nothing I've ever written before. So and thus far we've gotten some really great pull quotes from it. Jeff Smith read it and loved it. Bill Mumy, Ari Salvatore, a lot of people, getting really positive feedback from it. So I would highly recommend that. That'll be out in June.
Great, cool.
And Iron Man.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. I did the novelizations of both Iron Man and of the Hulk movie. I actually have a copy of the Iron Man novelization with me, which I can show you if you'd like. Except I have to go back there and get it. Do you want me to go get that?
Sure. Yeah, we'll ask everybody else what they're working
for. You talk about stuff that's coming out of there.
Yeah,
Chris, come back, though, right? Come back.
Chris, what are you looking forward to that's coming out tomorrow?
As an X-Men guy, X-Force, I'm interested in. I read the first one, and I thought the art was great, but I think that series has a turn to take that will establish whether it will be like more than just people running around murdering everyone.
What's better than that, though?
Yeah.
You guys may be different. You guys may be different people.
What I'm really looking forward to that's coming out tomorrow is Comic Book Comics number 1 by Fred Van Lent. Awesome, awesome, great book. We actually got a chance to read an advanced copy of it. It's fantastic. If you're at all interested in the history of comic books and want to read it in comic book form, that's really fun and funny, check it out.
There's some crazy stuff that actually happened to all the like dummy people they hired.
Hey, don't start reading the stuff.
No, we're going to read it right now.
No, you're really not. that's an advanced copy of the Iron Man novelization. It's a really good script. It's a really good script. And so is the Hulk, actually. Also, this is one other thing. This is a book I have coming out in September called Mascot to the Rescue, with illustrations by Colleen Doran.
Oh.
And this is, I'm terrible describing the stuff, so this is what it says on the dust jacket. Josh Miller, sixth grader at Demarest Elementary School, has a secret. Everything that happens to Mascot, the superhero sidekick in the Captain Major comic books, also happens to Josh. So when Josh finds out that Mascot is slated to die in the next Captain Major adventure, he knows he has to do something, and fast. A budding comics artist and writer himself, Josh and his new friend Kelsey, a.k.a. Large Lass, take off to find Stan Kirby, the creator of the Captain Major series, so they can save Mascot and Josh's life. As you may have gathered, it's a YA. And it's coming out from HarperCollins in September, and it's obviously was kind of inspired by the death of Robin Pohl. And it's dedicated to, the dedication reads, to the comic fans and their acclaimed sense of humor about themselves, I hope.
Awesome. Great. Nice cover.
Cool. These are great. What are you guys looking forward to?
12 number 3, JMS's new series. It's been good so far.
12 number 3.
I'll show you the math. And I've been
that's called 15.
Because you don't need to read it then. Thanks.
Spoiler 15. Logan number 1 is what I'm looking forward to.
All right, next week on the show, we have a sort of a summit about the state of the comic book industry.
A summit?
Ooh. Yes, a little bit of a summit. We have Heidi McDonald from the PW Beat.
Oh.
We have Brian Heater from the Daily Crosshatch, Kyle Fegley from Wizard Universe, and John DiBello, who you might know as Bully, the little bull who talks about comics, are all going to be on the show, and it should be really, really awesome and a lot of fun.
We're going to take the industry down.
Okay? Yeah, we're basically going to be like, comics suck, we don't like them, the end. It's like a minute long. Also, check us out 2 times a week at Pulp Secret, PULPSecret.com, where we do a show there. But don't tell anybody. Chris, anything you have coming up that you want to plug?
I'm pretty good. I'm fine, thanks.
All right, there's a couple of people we want to thank. We want to thank Chris for being on the show. We want to thank you guys. We're here every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. Please tell your friends. Good night.
Thank you.
Comic Book Club is recorded in front of a live audience every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. at the People's Improv Theater in New York City. To find out more info or to listen to additional episodes, go to popcultureshock.com/CBClub.